Vaydaber Moshe El Roshei Hamatos Livnei Yisrael Lemor Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem ... Eile Masei Vnei Yisrael Asher Yatzeu Me'eretz Mitzrayim Litziv Osam B'yad Moshe V'Aharon.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Matot Maseh. It's a double Parsha this week. Matot and Maseh combine more often than any other pair of Sedras that are combined, and they form the largest Torah reading of the year, 244 Psukim, 245, one of those. And I've always found it interesting, as you heard the first two psukim, the first pasuk of each of the two parshiot, very different in wording, but they have exactly the same numeric value. I haven't found that with any other opening psukim of Sedras, and to me it just was a gematria confirmation of the fact that Matot and Maseh are a pair more often than any other Sedras, even though they produce the largest Torah reading, and there would be other pairs that would be more convenient, shall we say, to combine. One way or the other, we are talking about, recording and first broadcast, as I say often, is Thursday, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 29th day of Tammuz. Tammuz has only 29 days, which means tonight, Thursday night, Friday, is Rosh Chodesh Av. Last Shabbat, we benched Rosh Chodesh, even though there are sources that bring down that some people challenged whether we should announce in advance the coming of Rosh Chodesh. I would say, obviously, the conclusion is that we do announce it. Make no difference. The only month we don't announce in advance is Tishrei, for different reasons. But the Hafa Amina, the thought that went into the suggestion of not to announce Rosh Chodesh Av in advance, is the statement in the Mishnah, Misha Nechnas Av Mima'atim Besimcha. When Av enters, we diminish in joy, or eliminate joy. And therefore, why would you announce it in advance? On the other hand, and I think this might be that which swayed the custom, when we announce Rosh Chodesh, we frame it in a blessing of the coming month, and it is hard to find a month that can use a blessing for good more than the month of Av. And, if you remember, we said Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av will be on Friday next. Haba Aleinu V'al Kol Yisrael L'Tova. Menachem Av, Menachem is an attachment to the word Av, which means comfort of, comforting of. And that really takes place after the first 9.5 days, or this year the first 10 days. And what developed, this is not a universal practice, but is the one that I find most common and sensible, that for the first 10 days of the month, you call the month of. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh Av, even though we said Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av. Shabbat will be the second day of Av, etc. Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of Av. This year the fast is postponed to Sunday, corresponding to July 29th. I forgot to tell you that today is July 19th on the secular calendar. And when we fast on Sunday, when we don't fast on Sunday, when we fast on the ninth day itself, then the mournful period is considered to continue through the 10th until noon of the day of the 10th. That's what I meant by 9.5 days of the month are mournful. When the ninth falls on Shabbat, or the ninth falls, no, that's all. When the ninth falls on Shabbat, as it does this year, as it hasn't in the last 14 years, even though it's a common occurrence, I've explained that in the past already, we fast on the 10th of Av. Obviously, the full day, not just until Chatzot, is mournful. And then the restrictions are eased following the day. And it turns out that 10 days of the month were mournful. That leaves 20 to 20 and a half days, which we label Menachem of, because the flavor of comfort in the promises and prophecies of the future, take over from the mournful period and change the nature of the month. That's the story. So, today, I mentioned, was Thursday, July 19th, Erev Rosh Chodesh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. It also is the beginning of the 9 days. Shabbat is Parshat Matot Maseh. And the following Shabbat is the ninth day of itself, also known as Shabbat Chazon, because of the reading of Devarim and its Haftorah Chazon Yeshayahu. But let's focus on the coming of the 9 days, and on Matot Maseh, and whatever we can work from that. Because it is already past Mincha time on Erev Rosh Chodesh, and it's likely that you'll be listening to this on Rosh Chodesh, or thereafter. But at least for Rosh Chodesh, we will do our usual practice and not read Psalm 130, but rather Psalm 121, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir lama alot esa enai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri meim Adonai osei shamayim va'oretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem, mitzara lirvacha ume'afela la'ora, umishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Last week when I played two clips from the songs for the 3 weeks, I wrongly identified them as an album by Noam Productions. This is, maybe it is, but this is an album by Avrami Flam of a cappella songs appropriate for the 3 weeks. And the one that I would like you to, the one that started the show, the introduction to it, I would like to continue. And it is called Habet. It comes from the Tachanun that is increased on Mondays and Thursdays between the Rachum v'Chanun Chatati Lefanecha portion and the Shomer Yisrael and Vanachnu Lo Neda portion. It begins with a line which is not part of the song, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, God, Hashem, the God of Israel, turn away from your fierce anger and relent upon the evil against your people. The song itself is the first stanza of that section. Habet mishamayim ure, look down from heaven and see how we have become an object of scorn and derision among the nations. We are regarded as sheep led to the slaughter, to be killed, destroyed, beaten, and humiliated. Yet, despite all this, we have not forgotten your name. Please do not forget us. A very, very powerful prayer. Not once upon a time, a long time ago, but yesterday, and who knows how many more times. Pigua, a bombing in Bulgaria, victims, Israelis, target, Israelis, and it perpetuates the idea that we are the favorite targets of terrorism. You take a look at today's Jerusalem Post. There was a story about an article by the Mandels about the non-inclusion of Israel in a major United Nations conference for victims of terror, and apparently the complicity of the United States itself, a major sponsor of this conference, in allowing Israel to be overlooked. You read the mission and goals of this organization, and it is so, so hypocritical and so sad that Israel is not part of that. So the sentiment in this prayer is not from once upon a time a long time ago. It is now. Habet mishamayim Avrami Flam. Here's the rest of the song.
Habet mishamayim urie ki ayinu lad vokeres bagoyim nechshavnu kasoyim latevach yuvo laharoi guli apeit ulemako ulecherpo ha-ha-beit mishamayim urie ki ayinu lad vokeres bagoyim nechshavnu katsoyim latevach yuvo laharoi guli
probably be bouncing between the Parsha and between the time on the calendar, but let's start with the beginning of Parshat Matot, It's a topic I've presented in the past, one of Nidarim, the first portion, the first few psukim of the first portion, basically sets down the simple but powerful statement that if a person promises something, pledges something, swears to something, accepts upon him something, he has to keep his word. Lo yachel devaro kechol hayotze mipiv ya'ase. You may not profane your words. Whatever comes out of your mouth, you shall do. Immediately following that is a much longer portion, which discusses two exceptions to that general rule of kechol hayotze mipiv ya'ase. Whatever comes out of your mouth, you shall do. The portion speaks of a girl. Our sages tell us we're talking about one that has reached the age of mitzvot of 12, and for the first half year she has a status called na'ara, during which time her vows are binding. However, her father has the authority of the Torah to cancel vows of his daughter at that age range when he hears them, on the day that he hears them. It's not an unlimited authority. It applies only during the day which he hears of a vow. So if a girl between 12 and 12 and a half makes a vow never to wear makeup or always to wear makeup or whatever, the father can nullify the vow, and the girl no longer is bound by the seemingly strict rule of the Torah of lo yachel devaro kechol hayotze mipiv ya'aseh. If she pledged to do something or not to do something, her father is able to cancel that, and therefore she is not subject to the rule of the Torah that you have to do what you say. Similarly, a husband, on the day that he hears of a wife's vow, and in this case there's a provision that it's a vow that has to affect him, he has the authority to nullify it and to cancel it, and she, therefore, is not bound by the Torah's obligation of kechol hayotze mipiv ya'aseh. Furthermore, what's not written here, but which is part of our oral law and tradition, is that anybody, not just a na'ara and a wife, but anybody has the ability to appear before a mumche, a rav who is an expert on the laws of vows, nidarim, or before a tribunal of three adult males, even laymen, and declare before them that they have a vow which they took, which has certain circumstances that had they realized at the time that they took the vow, they never would have said it. And there is the ability for some vows, for many vows, to be nullified with this kind of petition to the Rav or the Beit Din. Now this seems to be in contrast, contradistinction to lo yachel devaro. Here, if a person takes a vow or swears something or makes a commitment, in addition to kechol hayotze mipiv ya'aseh, whatever comes out of his mouth he shall do, is an alternate possibility of him having his vows nullified, which contrasts and contradicts lo yachel devaro. But maybe a better term in harmony with our halacha would be that these two things balance each other. There are vows that are meant to be kept. There are vows that should never have been made in the first place. The process by which one can have vows nullified, provided they are vows that can be nullified, and that is the domain of the expert in the laws of Nidarim. The concept is called Hatarat Nidarim. The process, the procedure is called Hatarat Nidarim. And the aforementioned nullification by a father of his daughter's vows or husband of his wife's vows is called Hafarat Nidarim. Hey, fe, as in falafel. Hafarat Nidarim versus Hatarat Nidarim. The result of the two are the same. A vow was in place. On the one hand, it seems to be ironclad and immovable and unremovable. And Hatarat Nidarim shows us that under certain circumstances, the vow can be removed. It all boils down to whether the person's heart and his mouth were correctly synchronized or not. You sometimes take a vow or say something or make a commitment that was made in haste or in anger or in frustration or whatever, and these have been declared non-vows, and sometimes they aren't even, they don't even need Hatarat Nidarim, and sometimes they do. But those are the details. The idea, bigadol, the big picture, is on the one hand, you have to give your word, you have to keep it. On the other hand, there are ways to get out of something that you never should have gotten into in the first place. And both of those work hand in hand to give us the complete, sensible, reasonable picture of vows, rather than the lopsided, one-sided, sometimes ridiculous situation. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Matot Maaseh, and more importantly, we'll be back with the end of this first part before we continue on to more of the Sedra and more of the calendar. Welcome back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Matot Maaseh, pre-Rosh Chodesh Av. And I just want to finish up with an example on the topic of Nidarim, and then we'll work on a different topic. Case in point is the Tanakh's story of Yiftach, who successfully battled on behalf of his people and pledged that if he were to be successful, he would offer as a sacrifice to God the first that emerged from his home, thinking cow, goat, sheep, and it was his daughter who came out first. Now, exactly what happened to her is debated by commentaries, but from a halachic point of view, the vow was never meant to include the possibility of his daughter coming out, and therefore would be nullable and voidable for sure under the circumstances. Exactly why it didn't happen like that in Yiftach and the Tanakh is another story, and it's complex. But the basic idea, which starts the Parsha of Matot, we've presented, and that is the Nidarim. Before we move on to the calendar, meaning the approaching 9 days, and maybe as an introduction to it, I'd like to play another clip from Avrami Flam's Songs for the 3 Weeks. This one is called Al Eile. It comes from one verse in the book of Echa, the Megillah of Echa, which we read on Leil Tisha B'Av, which will be next Motzoi Shabbat. The English translation is, "For these things I weep. My eye runs down with water, because the comforter that should relieve my soul is far from me. My children are desolate, for the enemy has prevailed." Depressing. part of Yirmiyahu's lament for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And it's something that I want to use as a launch to an idea. So listen to the song first, Al Eila Ani Vochia, of Rami Flam, and then we will talk.
La 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 la.
Thank you.
Okay, here's what I want to say. Mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, is the theme of the three-week period, intensifying in the 9 days, which begin tonight with Rosh Chodesh Av, intensify further next week, which is known as Shavua Shechalbo, the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, which is a little bit off this year because Tisha B'Av itself falls in the end of next week, Shabbat, but the fast of Tisha B'Av does not happen until the following week, which is Sunday, next. And therefore, there is a controversy, a dispute, as to whether next week is considered Shavua Shechalbo. According to Avelut HaChurban by Rav Yoel Schwartz, Ashkenazim tend to be strict and Sfardim tend to be lenient by not counting that as Shavua Shechalbo, because we, the Ashkenazim, have restrictions of the whole 9 days. It's not that different in the Shavua Shechalbo, although there are certain things which we won't get into now. Just to review quickly, our custom practice is that during the 9 days, starting tonight and going through Tisha B'Av, not counting Shabbat, we don't eat meat or drink wine. Halachically, the only restriction on wine and meat is the meal before Tisha B'Av fast, and this year that doesn't even apply because it's Shabbat. And therefore, all of our abstention from meat and wine during the weekdays of the 9 days is totally custom. And that should be kept in mind, but it should be held to, unless there are extenuating circumstances, in which case you should ask a formal question of a Rav. Not eating meat and drinking wine has a double association, a double reason, both of which apply. There is a well-known statement, Ein simcha ela bebasar v'yayin. Now, since the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, there is no joy except for festive meals with meat and wine. I editorialize that a little bit. And therefore, it's not appropriate during this 9-day mourning period for the Beit HaMikdash, for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, to eat meat and drink wine. Except for Shabbat, where there is not allowed to be any manifest mourning, and therefore we eat meat and drink wine on Shabbat. The second reason, or the second association, is that meat and wine were key elements of temple service. The meat of korbanot, many of those korbanot, the meat was eaten by kohanim and or the owners of the korban. Wine of libation is an association with a temple. And when you mourn the destruction of the temple, it is not appropriate to take these two foods of meat and wine and indulge in them. It's not sensitive. Side point you could add to this and say, well, wait a minute, what about bread? There was bread in the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe we shouldn't eat bread. Might be logical, but it's not the way tradition evolved. So, forget it. In fact, we have sources that say that a person who overdoes mourning for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, or even personal mourning, is not considered praiseworthy and should not overdo it. If you have a logic, or let's put it like this, the argument against someone taking on extra things would be to say to him, oh, wait a minute, meat, wine, bread, fruit, water, all have an association with the Beit HaMikdash. You're not going to abstain from all of these things. And this could be said to a person who carries it beyond the 9 days to the 3 weeks to the whole year. We don't do that. we follow tradition, and that is considered sufficient. When it comes to avelut, to mourning, we tend not to overdo it, because our natural tendency would be to overdo it, and the halacha reins you in by what I would call constructive mournful practices, careful not to go over the line into the destructive and self-destructive kind of mourning. That's why the Torah forbids pulling out your hair in grief, scratching, raking your skin in grief. These are not considered constructive. Anyway, I digress. So you have mournful practices during the 9 days. Bathing is to be reduced. Pleasure bathing is not permitted. Doing laundry and wearing freshly laundered clothes. Too much to go into everything like that. Let's leave it, because I'm still going for a point here. The song that was played, based on the verse from Eicha, is sad. Mourning is sad. It brings up sad memories. And this is part of our task, but only part. Because I believe that we need to form an agenda of what to do about it. It's not, woe, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, woe unto us, and grieve. But we have to mix that grieving with a plan. The plan is based upon the simple, or maybe in this case oversimplified, fact that we have reasons for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, reasons for the existence of Tisha B'Av as a sad day. And then you say, you know, we can turn things around. Now, I imagine every generation says the same thing, and yet we're not every generation, we're this generation. And I believe the goal of each of us and of all of us, those are not the same thing, is to be conscious of what kind of behavior we need to improve by ourselves and as a community. And I boil it down to 3 elements. First, Beit HaMikdash, you can summarize, was destroyed because the Jewish people turned their backs to God and embraced idolatry. It's more complicated than that, but that alone should at least epitomize destruction of the Beit HaMikdash is due to the lack of faith and commitment to do God's will. The second Beit HaMikdash is associated with interpersonal problems, that of sinat chinam and lashon hara, gratuitous hatred and gossip and character assassination, and developing an attitude of, you're not as good as me and I'm better than you. And there were interpersonal problems which led to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Between Bein Adam LaMakom, between a person and God, and Bein Adam LaChaveiro, a person and his fellow, you're covering the entire gamut of Torah and mitzvot. So, part of the solution, part of the agenda that I'm talking about, is to say, I did my grieving, I did my mourning, I heard the soulful tune of Eicha, and I said the keynote and the lamentations, and now it is time, which of course doesn't have to be one after the other, they could be at the same time, now is the time to say, All right. How do I become a better Torah observant Jew? On all levels, my relationship with God and my relationship with my fellows, with my family, with my friends, with my co-workers, with all of Klal Yisrael. We need, I mean, at this time of the year, very popular programs are the Shmirat HaLashon, or Shmiras HaLashon, as they say it, which are programs for men and for women. I should say women first, because they have the larger attendance, and for men, too. We even have an ad this week for a Shmirat HaLashon thing for men, where the punchline at the bottom is Shmirat HaLashon, guarding one's tongue is not just for women. There is a perception that women have a bigger problem with Lashon Hara, and therefore they spend more time on working on that problem. Men have the same problem, and men need to spend time working on it. But it's not just workshops in Shmirat HaLashon. It's general improvement of commitment to mitzvot, performance of mitzvot, attitude of the performance of mitzvot. And when or while we're getting ourselves straight about this, we also have to put onto this agenda, how do I transmit this to my family, to my children, to my students, and how does this become a nationwide campaign? So you could pick mitzvot here and there, you could do the shotgun effect, you could single in on any mitzvah, but I believe that the more observant of Torah and mitzvot we all are, in a nice and pleasant way, vis-a-vis those that are not yet up to that level, and those who are up to our level, the closer we will be to the end of exile and to the Geula, the redemption, because I believe that God is waiting for us, up to a certain point, is waiting for us to straighten our act out, where he will say, no reason anymore to continue the exile. Here's your Beit HaMikdash. Here's your return of the exiles completed, and get on to the next era, the Messianic era. The other element that fits into this is the land of Israel, the state of Israel, Israel, Eretz Yisrael. Because in addition to the destruction of the first and second Beit HaMikdash, which resulted in our losing our hold on the land, we have to bring into this the element of Chet HaMaraglim, the sin of the spies. No coincidence that next week we read Parshat Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu rehashes the episode of the spies. Exactly this year on the 9th of Av, exactly the day before we begin fasting, on Tisha B'Av, and the first tragedy and calamity associated with Tisha B'Av, according to the Mishnah in Ta'anit, is the day that the decree was pronounced on that generation's adults, males, not to go into Eretz Yisrael. I have simplified, call it oversimplified if you want, Chet HaMaraglim. Don't think it happened 3,300 years ago, and that's it. It happens every single day today. When a Jew says, Israel, a lovely place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there, that is the sin of the spies. That is contrary to God's will and command. And that is retarding and slowing up the process of Geula. Which means, in summary, you've got Torah and all the mitzvot, and let's put a focus on the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I'll tell you something else. It is in this week's portion of Mas'eh where we find the command to live in Eretz Yisrael and not to live anywhere else and call that home. We'll do more on this next week, but for now, Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.